Overlooking Phoenix, from high above in the Star Worldwide Network studios, Badge Boys. Stories, insight, guests, and true blue humor with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. And now, here they are, the Badge Boys.
Welcome back to another edition of the Badge Boys, the show where two retired cops talk to the community. I'm retired Crime Stopper Sergeant Darren Birch.
I'm retired Phoenix Police Officer Jason Schechterly.
And before I introduce this guest and we get into going to be another really good interview with a great cop and a good guy who's doing so much in retirement, like a lot of cops do, because we don't turn it off. It's not a light switch. We can't just turn it off. We truly care. It's in our DNA, and this is absolutely one of the best of the best. Before we get into talking with this exceptional individual, did you see the headlines about the top Mexican official, kind of like our FBI, head of the FBI? He was indicted locally. We'll talk more about it in Cop Talk, but the reason I want to kind of talk about it, because it kind of goes to one of our last shows that is now on FRN, the First Responders Network, new Axon streaming entertainment. If you don't have that, please jump on that. It's free. We have 16 Badge Boy shows, but it's not just Badge Boys. They have so much content.
Yeah, it's an incredible app, and Axon has done an amazing job to be getting word out. You know, we talked about ever since A&E got rid of live PD and, you know, some other things in the middle of all this vote cancel culture bullshit we're going through, FRN stepped up, and it's incredible. Not just because we're on it. There's a lot of other things that I love to watch.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And again, this is the ones who put out the body camera, right? Yeah. Axon. Oh, yeah. So they know what body camera stuff's out there. So we have some of the greatest body camera shows, trust me. Yeah. FRN, First Responders Network, is free. Jump on it, and you'll see a particular new show on Badge Boys that talks about the cartel and specifically the corruption that's going on over
Matt
there.
He's the chief deputy of Pinal County. He works directly for Sheriff Mark Lamb, who's America's sheriff. It was an incredible interview. He's in the expert. Thick of it. He's so knowledgeable, and it was a great interview. So that's awesome that was posted. Yeah, jump on there, download the app. It takes 5 seconds, and enjoy the show.
Speaking of great guests, we've had this gentleman on. Oh my gosh, probably two years ago. I would say but anyways, the reason I know that is because I picked up the book, love the book, as I do with a lot of the guests. I'll pick up the book, and I loved it. And now he's here. I was going to bring the book so he could sign it, and I forgot I loaned it out.
I know. You know, that's kind of cool, though. You thought so much of it that it would benefit somebody else. You loaned it out. So at least you didn't like leave it in the, you know, your office or something.
Right.
So I give you credit. That's a good one.
And to your point, it will help this officer, this retired officer, because the book is about helping bridging the gap from that world into PTSD. We have Glenn Williams in studio. He's a 26-year veteran, law enforcement. He served as a dive team and firearm supervisor. He was in the active shooter and patrol rifle instructor. And he now travels around the world with this Bridging the Gap curriculum at police departments, conventions, and conferences throughout the country. His mission is to reduce the effects of PTSD, divorce, and suicide in high-risk and trauma-exposed populations like law enforcement and public safety. So without further ado, I want to welcome Glenn Williams to Badge Boys.
Well, thank you. And Jason and Darren, I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
You know, it's funny because I've talked with you and we've communicated both on phone and email, and you actually met Jason in person before you even were on the guest 2 years ago at the When It Blew. So you're embedded in this environment and you're like a brother. So when you said you're in Tucson, I said, oh my God, we got to get you on the show. And thank you for coming down.
No problem. I didn't know it rained that much though in Arizona.
It's so windy.
It's not supposed to.
It's like Chicago. This is bizarre. No, this is very unusual.
We have like 50 mile an hour gusting winds today. I've never seen it like this. I lived there 50 years.
48 degrees. Yeah. Insane. This is Chicago. It's weird.
It's warmer.
Without the crime. Without the crime.
Yes. It's warmer in like Michigan right now than it is in Arizona. That's a serious, serious problem.
It's weird.
This is when Arizonans can break out leather.
Yeah. The first question goes to Jason, which goes really to the heart of police work.
Yeah, got to take you back quite a few years, Glenn, and find out why you actually put your name on the application.
I finally found out what I wanted to do, and I wanted to make a difference. I applied for federal law enforcement, and they disqualified me because I have diabetes.
And wow, really?
Yeah.
That was a criteria back then.
Yeah, in 1990.
I don't think they do that now.
No, they cannot. Somebody sued them 15 years later. And, yeah. And so now you can ADA. Be an officer. Yeah. But I went to a friend of mine. I said, man, I know what I want to do, but what do I do now? And I was crushed. And he said, no, there's a local department hiring. Why don't you apply there? So we had 500 applicants, 3 openings, and I got lucky.
Isn't that the best feeling?
Oh, yeah.
500 applicants.
And you didn't do this as a young man. Talk about how old you were when this happened.
Yeah, they were all 21. I was 32.
Outstanding.
But it took me that long to figure out what I wanted to do.
So that's okay. You had life experience behind you,
maturity.
Well,
I think it's even better because as a young rook, it's an overwhelming job. It's an overwhelming job.
I couldn't have done it at 21.
Thank you. It's a similar situation.
It wasn't for me.
Yeah. You had life experience.
I was 26 and...
You had life experiences still, that brought to the table.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so talk about that first year. What was it everything you had hoped it would be?
The academy was awesome.
It is.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I don't understand anybody who complains about the academy. The academy is one
of
the best
having parts. Been in the military, it was a cakewalk. Be honest.
Good point.
Thank you for calling the Air Force the military.
I'm giving you one. I'm being generous
today.
Misspeak? I'm being generous.
Did you misspeak? No, that's true. If you have the structure and discipline of the military, the academy is, I would call it enjoyable.
This was.
And when you're thirsty for that knowledge, what they teach you, I mean, 50 hours of criminal law, then you're learning high-risk traffic stops, then you're learning...
Building searches and everything.
You're a sponge, and I just couldn't wait to go every day. So it was awesome. Other than showing up at 4 a.m. to run up a mountain, that wasn't enjoyable. But
on my birthday. True story. But so please talk about the academy, buddy.
Well, no, the academy was great. They taught us all the stuff that we needed to know, we thought. Yeah. And I excelled in the academy. But I didn't realize then I was kind of hiding behind a mask. I put on this arrogant show because of the competition, and I didn't want anybody to get too close to me because they're my competition. And when I got to the real training, field training.
On the street.
Yeah. My field training officer pulled me in the first night and threw me in this chair in this dark room, and I had no clue what room it was. Later, it was the interrogation room in the suspect chair is what it was.
I'm liking this guy.
Go ahead. Right there.
Oh, man. Well, he hovered over me, and... He says, you've got the reputation around here as a cocky, arrogant know-it-all, and I'm going to change that.
Wow.
And it was downhill from
Jesus
there.
Talk.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. Well, they're not your competition.
No,
they're your partners. They're your team. They're your responsibility in a lot of ways, right? Once you get out there in the street. Even if you don't like somebody, that's what I found. Because there are plenty of cops that I worked with that I'm like, you know, I'd rather not go on a call with this guy. However... Yeah. I will die for that person.
And that's guaranteed. Exactly. I didn't like the way they did things.
Hell of a thing. Yeah.
And some of the things, but I also knew they didn't like me. And that was obvious. But I also knew that if something happened, they were going to be right there on my back.
Of course.
And take my back.
So talk about when you were on your own now, shagging calls. What kind of officer were you? Because I'm looking at your resume and you were all over the place. You know, dive team, you know, the rifles, whole bit.
When I got on my own, finally, and I went through 2 field trainings, the first one I failed. And what was funny is they actually removed the 2 officers from the field training program because there were some things that were pulled that were a little sketchy, like putting me in a situation where I might have to use my firearm and not telling me it was not real.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's a red flag.
Yeah. And
wow.
I had a couple of things like that occurred, and... I got through that. I went through a second field training, and that one they wanted to accelerate me because I didn't pass the first one. They wouldn't, and that was fine. But once I got out on my own, it was a different world, whole different world. And I was actually pretty open back then. Like I was taking calls, and I was still learning. And I had a good sergeant at the time. She was a sergeant major in the Army.
The real service.
Yeah, the
Thank
real
you.
Service.
Thank you.
And And well, both my kids have been in the Army, so yes.
Go Army.
Yeah. 82nd Airborne, baby.
Thank you for their service.
Yeah. Thank you for their service.
But anyway, so she was a real good supervisor, and she was, you have good leaders and bad leaders.
You do.
Well, you have good leaders and bad managers.
I always use the air quote when I say leadership, a better way of putting it.
Yeah, good point.
And she was one of the good ones. And so when she came over, if I did something incorrect, she'd say, "Hey, you know what? Let's try a little different way here. What do you think?" You know, and she'd approach me and train me.
Enlightened leadership.
Yes, and I mean this is back in 1992.
Wow.
So I think before anybody really worried about leadership too much, other than Lee Iacocca, and. Yeah.
That's a very good point, actually.
But so I got going and patrolling, and it was fun. It was just fun. Speeding, yeah. Pulling over traffic, yeah.
You see, that's how I was. I wasn't a traffic guy. I just loved shagging radio calls. What was your passion? Mine was helping that person calling 911. Yeah. What was your passion?
The kids. I actually... my first stint in detectives was as juvenile detective, and it was because I had a great area. I had shopping malls, I had car dealerships, I had residential, I had schools, I had every mix that you could have in my area, and it was awesome because I never knew what was going to come up, and that's what I liked. I don't like the same thing over and over and over, and so we would go out, and one of the sergeants that I had at that time introduced us to brand new. I heard it's brand new now too. Community-oriented policing. I was reading an article the other day.
Yeah, a whole new, brand new concept.
Yes.
That we repeat over and over, and it's a good thing.
Yeah, it is. Beat. And trying to get the, procedures down, the way it works down. And that's all up to the individual officer.
Sure.
But that was what I really liked the most, was going out on those stints and getting to know the people. They were awesome.
You mentioned children, and I'm going to take us to a dark place now, because your book really is about helping people through that dark times. I had a very similar case when I was working night detectives, where we inherited what was a missing child, ended up being a dead child, accidental. We took all the accidentals and so forth. Can you share that with us? Are you willing to do that?
Yeah, I will. And this was actually after I'd been an officer about 17 years. And... I walked into roll call 6 a.m. I was working day shift at the time, got a call about a missing child. So we went out, it was my area, so I went out. And as I pulled into the parking lot of the apartment complex, there's this big fountain, and some teenagers the night before had dumped boxes and boxes of soap suds in there. So there were 10-foot high bubbles overflowing out. Couldn't see the fountain, it was on the street, on the parking lot. And I found the apartment where the kid was missing. His parents actually called him Little Houdini because he was an escape artist. They put an extra lock on the door, and he still got out. So first thing we do is search the apartment or the house, because that's about where 80% of them are found, and he was not there. So now we checked with the parents, where do his friends live, what's the park area that he likes to go to, where do you take him for walks, et cetera, because he's 3 years old. He's going to go where he's familiar. And we searched for about 45 minutes. I had some other guys join me at that time and for the search. And after 45 minutes, we gathered in the parking lot by that fountain. And we were standing there thinking, okay, where do we go next? We're pretty much at a dead end. And we're going to have to expand the circle out. And then a little breeze came up. And I firmly believe in a God, because, man, there are too many things that happen that just... I had nothing to do with, and they happened. And as the breeze split the bubbles in the fountain just a little bit, and we could see a foot. And we pulled the young man out of the fountain and did CPR. And did that till fire got there, because those are the experts. And so we turned him over to them. And that was kind of hard.
Obvious signs of trauma?
Yeah.
Like, you knew when you saw it wasn't just a dead child? Like, you knew you had a criminal case, or
no,
just a
horrible
outcome?
A horrible outcome, okay. Yeah. There was no crime.
Accidental.
And, yeah, accidental. He'd clock, 3-year-old bubbles. Oh, man.
Oh, right? It's playtime.
Yeah, and then he crawls in, and he's in the water, and he can't get out. And it sucked. I held my shit together, because
well, you did CPR.
Yeah, we did CPR. I did, yeah. And then I got hold of the parents and I kept them calm and got them in the ambulance to take them to the children's hospital and got some other neighbors to watch their other kids. And, you know, I took care of all that stuff.
And you're in cop mode. You're in that profession. You're wearing that hat where you're not showing the emotion.
Yeah, don't show anything.
Right.
We got this. Right. And then when he took off, they took off, and about halfway up, the fire department called it, said he not made it, and we got word. And that was crushing. I mean, that was one of the worst. Anyway, I had a good leader that day, though. I had a good leader. He walked over to me, and he's from Louisiana, and he says, "You okay, brother?" And for the first time in my career, 17 years, for the first time, I said, "No, I'm not."
Awesome.
Yeah. He says, "You know what? Don't worry about your report." He says, "You'll have to do it in a little while, but go take care of yourself." And I went and found a church.
What a great guy.
Yeah. He's still a friend of mine today.
That's very cool.
He is a great guy. So I went and found a church parking lot, backed up against a brick wall, and I sat there and bawled my eyes out for about an hour. And then finally, when I got that all together and got that out, I went back to work.
You know, it's something to be able to say it's okay not to be okay. And this was a time period about when, and was that something unusual for you, having experienced that in the department?
Oh, absolutely. If you admitted you had a problem or you wanted to go seek counseling or something at that time, you were let go for being unfit for duty. And I'm glad things are changing. I'm glad people like Jason are out and you're out on the radio here and doing your thing, because we're getting the word out that, hey, you know, because we're sending traumatized people out to deal with people in trauma. And how's that working? You wonder why there's problems?
Right.
I mean, I know going through marriage problems and stuff, how it affected my job. And at the time, I didn't realize it. But looking back, I'm thinking, man, how did I do that? Or like with this kid, I had sucked it up for 17 years. And that's not the first kid. And that's not just an emotionally bad experience for me, but it's not one of the most dangerous ones I've had.
But there's those things that just stand out, and this one stood out.
Yeah.
So when you look back on it, and I want, obviously, a big part of this show is to benefit other officers, especially, you know, our newer generation that are suffering from things that we didn't have to.
Yeah.
Was it just an anomaly, and you can't really explain in hindsight why it was that one thing, or was it a buildup over years and years, and that call that morning was the final thing that broke that one weak link that destroyed your entire chain?
There was a buildup over the years. Okay. Definitely a buildup over the years. I was having nightmares. That was after my first divorce, and I had sucked up. I didn't tell my first wife anything. She didn't know any of this stuff. Mm-hmm. My second wife didn't know anything. Yeah. I didn't tell.
Yeah, we're not good at talking.
Yeah, we're not good. I mean, I was taught suck it up, buttercup.
There's things
they
don't need to hear, though. It's a delicate balance, right?
It is, because you've got to share it, or it will eat you alive.
That's true.
And if it eats you alive, you're worthless. It's like running code. If you don't get there, you can't be of help.
Right.
And we're running code all the time. Entire waking life, we're running code, basically. And we're not taking care of ourselves. And if we don't take care of ourselves, we are worthless to our community.
I love how you're saying that. It brings to mind one of my favorite quotes. It's an old German proverb. And it says, "A problem shared is a problem halved." Mm-hmm. And that's very true. It's finding within ourselves the ability to share, and then you got to kind of choose wisely who you're going to share it with, right?
Exactly.
I've been much better at sharing long after the fact than when it was. I mean, because I know I had marriage problems when I was a homicide detective, because I was like, you don't need to hear about this. I'm going to sit here and eat my spaghetti dinner, even though I watched an autopsy today or investigated a scene, and I'm going to do math homework with my kid. But then hours later, my wife would be like, you're here, but you're not even here. Well, do you know what I saw today? Do you know what I dealt with today? Do you know what this family's going through? And here we are living the American dream. That's a hard thing to, you know.
And you don't even realize that I had that. You brought up two experiences I get to share. One of them is later. My kids were in junior high and we're sitting on the couch watching this comedy show. And they're rolling on the floor laughing, tears in their eyes. And I'm sitting there.
Stoic?
Oh, yeah. And my son looks at me and says, Dad, don't you think this is funny? And I said, yeah, it's funny. He says, well, then why aren't you laughing? Oh, I'm laughing on the inside. I was so full of shit. And I didn't.
I'm not laughing at you, but it's just easier.
I'm
laughing on the inside, but I'm not.
And looking back when I was writing my book, I thought about that. I went, oh man, you were screwed up, dude. And then back to the academy, they brought in our spouses for a 4-hour session.
Oh, wow.
And they said, you know, the divorce rate in law enforcement is really high. And you're going to see things that you are not going to want to share because they're so gruesome. And you're going to see things you can't share because it's an ongoing investigation, blah, 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 blah. And after 4 hours, we all walked and they said, but keep the communication open with your spouse so you don't get divorced. And at the end of the session, we're all walking out going, and?
Yeah, and? What's a tool for that?
Yeah. Well, it took me 25 years, but I came up with that tool.
Talk about that.
Please share.
Please.
Yeah.
The book.
It's in my book. But what you do is you got to look at self-accountably. What did I do? What did I do? Almost like writing a police report. You leave out the gruesome crap. Like I had to go through a door one night. The guy had in there just shot his wife. And I run through the door. And I call this the red door because it was a freaking red door. And I'll never have a red door in my life. I can't stand it. And I was forced to sit out on the curb and watch and wait for the suspect to come. He parked 8 blocks away, snuck through backyards, even through an FBI agent's backyard, and came in the back of the house and shot his wife. Mm. And I'm going to give you both versions, okay? As I was sitting out there on the curb, all of a sudden this 12-year-old boy about 4 in the morning, and I'd been there for about 6 hours, comes running out going, he's shooting everybody, he's yelling. And I jumped out, grabbed my weapon, I scream into my radio, shots fired at the domestic house because everybody knew where I was at. And I went in the door. And as I came in the door, it slammed against the wall. There's 3 people fighting in the living room. There's 2, the parents off to the left a little bit. And I recognized one of the people, and I figured 2-on-1, the one's the bad guy. And so I holstered up and grabbed him, threw him down, put him in handcuffs. Now, these are all gang members. They're all gang members. And that's why they didn't want me in the house, to protect their daughter. Because her husband had taken a shot at her in a neighboring city earlier in the day. She came to mom and dad's house to be safe. And so I was forced outside. Anyway, as I'm getting up, I'm responsible for this guy. He's in my cuffs. And I'm scanning the floor and I cannot find the dang gun. I mean, I am hyped out of my mind.
Hostile environment.
Hostile, big time. And I can't find the gun. Later, the evidence techs found it, floor-length drapes against the wall underneath the drapes. It had gotten kicked during the fight, but had no clue. I went upstairs, and the girl had been laying in bed with her 2-year-old child, their 2-year-old child. It was her husband that shot her. And he came up with a .22. That's why I didn't hear the shots outside the house. It was a .22, yeah, and shot her in the forehead. And I will never forget as the blood trickled down over her nose, onto her cheek, and she was like she was asleep. But I went back down, and I can't pronounce her dead because I'm not medical.
Right.
And I'm just kind of waited. And about 5 minutes later, finally, everybody showed up. They got me outside and went there. And that was kind of an interesting how would I share that differently? And I kind of kept that pretty toned down because I was scared as hell going through that door. I knew there was a gun. I knew that's what I had to do. Yeah,
active shooter in a gang house. Doesn't get worse, right?
Not a whole lot. Yeah. And so that's what I did. Now, how I would share that, and again, I toned that down. I left out a lot of details just for time's sake. But what I would rephrase that is, okay, I was assigned to protect a lady one night. And her husband snuck in and started shooting people. I went through the door. I took him down and put him in cuffs, got him in custody. I was scared going through it. It's okay to share feelings. Okay. Yeah. It's okay to share feelings. And I said, I was scared as hell going through the door. But once I figured out who he was, I got him taken care of, got him cuffed, made sure he was safe. And then I went up and checked. And unfortunately, I was too late. The victim had been shot by the husband. And so I leave all the emotional garbage out, other than how I felt. You know, I was sad. Like with the child, I was pissed off when the child was in the fountain because I was mad at the teenagers for putting suds in the fountain and hiding everything.
Which is just a prank.
Yeah, it was.
But at the time, they're the focus of your target of your rage.
Yeah. And that's one of the symptoms I started showing was anger.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that I was pissed off at everybody. I just, that's how I responded. It was the way I kept people away. And if I kept people away, I'm good. I don't need anything.
This hurt your marriage. This, I mean, your personal life. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you got a beautiful life now helping others?
The first marriage was destroyed. I quit talking. We quit doing anything. In fact, communications were so bad. When I gave her divorce papers, she says, "You can't leave me. I have cancer."
Oh.
And I'm going, "No, you don't have cancer. You would have said something if you had cancer." And she didn't feel she could talk to me.
Wow.
And so I held on to things for about a year, but I was done. I left after that. I'm a slow learner, so I tried it again. And the same thing, she used to tell me, "You only talk about surface stuff." And I used to kind of get angry about that. But looking back, she was absolutely right. And I talked surface stuff. And anyway, we ended up divorced. I spent 3 years at my cabin by myself up in the mountains. And during that time, I went through some self-accountability training and some internal training. And I actually got back in touch with who I really am. I was a cop. I let the job become my life. I'm a cop. You know, I don't work as a cop. I'm a cop. Yeah. And that's what I did. I started learning that, no, that's what I do for a living. I love it, but I'm Glenn.
Yeah.
And I started getting in touch with nature. Nature's a huge healer. I was living in the aspens and the pine trees, and I started going for hikes in the winter.
Look at the stars.
Oh, man. Yeah. I had moose in my driveway, deer all around me. The breeze in the aspen trees and the leaves was amazing. And then when it snowed, I bought snowshoes. And the crunch going through until you hit a deep spot and have to pull your way out. I've scrambled up a tree trunk getting out of a hole several times.
And if I can, having read the book, you talked about your life was as a cop and everything that had to be with police. And yet when you found yourself in that dark place and kind of, if you will, isolated, it wasn't the police that came to your rescue. It was family.
Yeah. That's exactly right. I lost touch with everybody. In fact, I went through a lot of the things up there. I was 57 miles from work. So I'd get up at 3:30 in the morning to drive to work, be there by 6. And then I would work till 4 if I didn't work overtime. So I would get home after the drive about 7 o'clock at night. And I was 11 miles from town, I think, around there. And so once I got home, I didn't want to go anywhere. And I would go in and I would pour myself a drink and I would make dinner and then I would go to bed. Now, I was a good boy. I only had 2 drinks a night, but they were 34 ounces each.
I'm making this up.
Oh, I was like, all right.
Yeah, I know that too. I've had 2 drinks.
Should I have that? But mine are just a little bit, wine glasses.
Yeah. No,
devil's in the details.
Yep. And so I felt no pain. I was numb every night. And I did that for about 9 months. And then after going through some of these training things and getting kind of going through, I looked at myself and went, "What the hell are you doing?" Like you said, nobody cares. I'm only ruining my life.
Yeah.
And so I started changing habits. And that's the hard part, changing habits. So what I did was I threw my gear in my car and I'd stopped at the gym on the way home in town before I went home. And then I'd get home, I'd make a decent deal. You know, it doesn't mean I quit drinking completely. I still like a glass of wine or a gin and tonic every now and then, especially when it's a football game on. But that's, you know, that's what I do and I'm under control. At that time, I wasn't, and I didn't even realize I wasn't. And then I look back now at the emotional things on going through divorce. I got removed from 2 specialized teams because I made, they were minor decisions or minor mistakes, but I looking back now, and I was pissed at the time, but yeah, I could have screwed things up major because I wasn't focused. I was focused on saving my marriage. I got to save my marriage. I don't want to be a 2-time loser. Right. That's how I looked at myself. And I wasn't. But by going through those things, I was able to reconstruct and get back in touch with the real me. And that is what I go out and talk to people about now is, here's how you can do this. Here's some options. In fact, get outside the box, the law enforcement box. You were talking earlier about some things that were going on, and it's all because we put ourselves in this tiny little law enforcement box. And if you're outside that box, you're weird. Or if you're outside that box, you're going to jail. Or if you're outside that box, you are something they want to get rid of.
Nothing them.
Yeah, don't make anybody think. Well, they do that by not letting you think. And so I think. And as I look outside that box, we've got to change a lot of things in law enforcement overall, because it's a continuing box.
And I think small departments, and I could be wrong, but I think small departments are more guilty of this than not. I think mm-hmm. with larger departments, they realize they have resources. They realize, you know, you yeah. need outside influence. Yeah. Your friends shouldn't all just be cop friends. You need to be yourself and have an identity.
And that's a key point because, yeah, you just can't go hang out with other cops because you've got to broaden out. And I actually did that for a while. I taught scuba diving too. That was my outlet, and it was peaceful in the water, and I loved teaching people, so I did that for years. But then I converted it over to law enforcement diving. Gee, go figure.
Right.
And I brought pretty much forensic diving to Utah. And I mean, there were only two of us in the state that I later got certified as an instructor trainer, and there's one other guy who was certified as a law enforcement instructor, and we were the only two that really had anything. Obviously, the first thing I did was go, okay, did I do it right? I looked at the standards, looked at everything, went, okay, we're good, because I was making it up on the fly when I started.
So you're at the end of your career.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back, what point did you say, I need to write a book? Was it at the end cap of your career, or was it reflecting back thinking, I need help others so they don't follow my footsteps, if you will?
What's funny is I'd started talking to a counselor towards the end of my career, and I suddenly was seeing these breakthroughs, and I told her, you know what? I want to share these breakthroughs. I want to share these with other people so they don't do the same stupid shit that I did. And I was up in my cabin, and one morning I woke up about 6 a.m, and all of a sudden I grabbed a pen and paper, and just ideas kept coming and started writing. And I wrote it all down and it for 4 hours, and I had no clue what I wrote. Well, I went and showed her the paper, and I had to read it because I couldn't – my writing was horrible at that time. Still is, but and I had to read it and figure out what I wrote. And she says, wow, there's your program, because I'd been talking about teaching a program. There's your program. That's 60% done. Finish it now. And it took me about 6 months to finish it. But that one day, I got 60% of my program, and the program evolved into the book. And when I started writing the book, it just was coming and coming.
Cathartic.
And coming. Yeah. Yeah, big time. And that's what I talk about sometimes in my classes, and therapists use this called journaling. Yeah. Write it down. Because what that does is lets the mind know it's okay to let it out. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to share it with anybody. So that's safe. But then the next time, the mind will go, well, I safely shared it there. I can share it here. We're good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always kind of refer to it as, and I'm dating myself because there's no such thing as tea kettles anymore, but you know, it's the tea kettle. The water's on, the heat is on, and it's boiling, and then all of a sudden it starts whistling, yeah. And if you were to plug it up, it will explode, mm-hmm. And that's us.
Yes.
Yeah.
So tell us, how can we get this book? Where is it available? And then also, what advice would you give in terms of journaling through your career?
Okay. Well, first off, the book is available on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Target, I think it was. Walmart actually has it. I found out a couple days ago.
Good for you. Nice.
Yeah. So you can actually order it through any of those, or you can get hold of me or Darren or somebody, and we'll figure it out.
I won't loan another copy out because I'm holding on to mine. Yeah. But it is a wonderful book, Bridging the Gap. And I mean it when I say I read it cover to cover, and oh my gosh, a day. It was just, I just loved it. When I say a day, probably, you know, X amount of hours, but it really is a good read and so important. Looking at that book, what advice would you give to somebody starting this career in keeping in mind with the book?
Go in with an open mind and don't allow yourself to close down. Don't let the job become your life. You mentioned journaling, document stuff. There's things that I wish I had that I got rid of.
Oh,
that I just, You know, of course, I'm a junk collector. Everything I own, I have boxed somewhere.
Pack rat.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to clean out. And I got rid of some of the letters that I had that I should have kept and things like that. So don't be afraid. I had one case where my sergeant brought me the dispatch tape because I chased a burglar up into the mountains, ended up on a foot chase through the mountains, went down a 100-foot steep rock ledge, got stitches in my knee and stuff, but I got him. And our radios didn't work up there, so nobody knew where I was at. You know, but the whole thing evolved. And so I had that tape for years, and I don't even know where that is now. And
these are things you need to hold on to for prosperity as well as your children's children's children.
Absolutely. And, you know, but yeah, speak to somebody. That's the other thing is don't be afraid to speak out. You get a pick. My first was a counselor that I picked, private away from the department, because I didn't trust the department or people in the department to not have some repercussions. So I went outside and I don't do that. So don't be afraid to do that for your own health. And if you're healthy, then the people around you will be healthy. And that's what I call the ripple effect. If you can take care of your family and have a great relationship there, that will ripple out to work. And then that will ripple out to your community. And all this crap we're seeing going on in the world will eventually go away if we get that done.
Yeah. Those ripple effects, never take those for granted.
No.
Put that drop in the water and you never know where it's going to go. And I can't thank you enough for sharing all this. You touched on so many incredible points. And the key thing for me, of course, similar to you, I'm looking back on a lot of things. And I just want all the officers out there right now to understand you got to continue to learn from those who went before you. And then you have to turn that in to leaving it behind for those that are going to come after you. That matters. Your legacy matters. And there's nothing wrong with being selfish. Writing a book is therapeutic. Giving public speeches, no matter the accolades, no matter the thank you, no matter, oh, you helped me so much. Yeah, that's why I'm here, but I really help myself and I continue to do that. So people need to, you touched on, man, full circle. So I can't thank you enough for being here. And if you don't mind, will you stick around for our Cop Talk segment?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. We will be right back for my therapy session.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Badge Boys. We'll be back right after this. If you like the Badge Boys, you'll love their books, starting with Burning Shield, the Jason Schechterle story, which Arizona Diamondbacks president Derek Hall proclaimed, "Jason is an inspiration, and his story must be read and shared." The professionally written novel is a powerful biography chronicling Jason's gut-wrenching battle to health after being trapped in a fireball that consumed his police car, and his high-stakes legal showdown against the Ford Motor Company for their explodingly lethal Crown Victoria police cruisers. Then there's Darren's award-winning Twisted But True book trilogy, with close to 100 compelling and funny true crime stories that American detectives with Lieutenant Joe Kenda producer called the perfect blend of humor, heroism, and honor. And retired Colonel Dave Grossman declared, "Darren's Twisted But True books are hilarious, deep, and powerful." Each book in the series received the Pinnacle Award for the best true crime book, and a story from book two was featured on an ID Channel television show. And Robin's most recent book, Soul Stirrings, reviewed as an often humorous and spiritually uplifting story of a widow's soul-searching pilgrimage to the afterlife. Darren called it a love story, a ghost story, an investigative story. It's a story like no other. And Robin's first book, Victim No More, where she shares her harrowing experiences with rape and domestic violence as Robin takes the reader on a very personal journey through the morass of abuse and loss, and ultimately, survival. These Badge Boy books should be on everybody's top 10 reading list. You're listening to Badge Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterle. Now, back to the Badge Boys.
Welcome back to Badge Boys, everybody. Darren, that was one of those interviews.
Powerful.
It was powerful, and it was emotional. It was heavy. It was thought-provoking. But as I'm sitting here during the break, I'm like, you know, that's one of those. You ever watch a movie where either you laugh so hard or you get so wrapped up in something, and then if you watch it a second time, a third time, you realize all the things you missed, and you glean more out of it. I think that's one of those interviews.
You could listen over and over.
I would encourage you should probably listen to that 3, 4, 5 times because my thoughts are swirling right now. It was awesome to hear all of that, and again, so thought provoking. And I'm self-reflecting like crazy right now, but it's time to continue to be.
Before you do that, though, your producer's going to jump in here and say something.
Uh-oh.
That brought me to tears, and here's what I have to say. I produce many, many shows at this network, as you know, but the one thing I'm so proud of that you guys do, you bring so many people in here that share their stories. They're very vulnerable. And a lot of people see law enforcement, you know how it is, one side or the other, but we don't see them as human. We see them as people who put on a badge, they put on a cape, they're trying to save the world, right? That's what most of us look at, that you're our saviors. You do things that we normies don't do. That's what we call it. We're normal. We're not cops. So for me to sit here as a human being, it opens my eyes to the shit that you guys go through every day and how you're supposed to just tuck it away and not deal with it. So for me as your producer, I want to say thank you for humanizing police officers and letting us know that you're real, that you're human, and we have to see that side of you. So thank you for doing that.
That's why Robin's the best, not only producer, she's just simply the best.
Yeah. And we're so fortunate because we get these guests that have these amazing stories.
We do.
And we provide them with a safe space. And we're brothers. Mm-hmm. You know, we really are. The stuff we're talking about, you know, as I'm looking at Glenn, is I love this guy.
Oh, yeah.
And we've had the communication for the last 2 years, you know. And it's a brotherhood. Yeah. It really is. And, again, thank you for sharing, my friend. We are going to go into Cop Talk. So I also want to thank you for joining us on this Cop Talk. As a retiree, you can be honest as we go through these headlines.
And don't worry. You're going to be nicer than me. So you will not look bad during the segment. That's all on me.
The first Cop Talks interview, I'm going to be looking at the time crunch here because we do have a time here. So maybe like 2 minutes on each of these four items. First headline, Mexico's ex-top security official is convicted of cartel bribery. We alluded to this during our opening. Genaro Garcia Luna, once the top cop in Mexico's bloody war against its powerful criminal groups, was convicted in New York. Which I love. He's basically been described as J. Edgar Hoover of Mexico during his term. He was hard on the cartel. Nope. The jury made the decision after only just a couple of hours because they got a bunch of narco traffickers that went ahead and turned a dime on him because there's no what's that called with their honor among thieves?
Oh.
Bullshit. Yeah. Bullshit. Every one of them was a snitch in prison. Yeah. Your thoughts?
Well, I think that just, you know, it's a shame, obviously, because he had a job to do that he was expected to do. But it's, once again, proof at the highest levels that your two biggest concerns are all of ours that we can be influenced by is the lure of lots and lots of money and the fear of the permanent thing of death. And that's probably what he was facing. I can either be a millionaire or I can get brutally murdered. Those are my choices. Which one are you going to choose? So I'm not defending him by any means. But I think that is a great example of how corrupt it is down there. And, you know, that's scary shit that I just wouldn't even want to have to deal with.
What do you think, Glenn?
Absolutely. Power and money. And that's what, unfortunately, that makes the world turn. And I mean, even here in the U.S., it's a lot of it's hidden more, but it's still here.
Yeah, I do appreciate your kind of focus on that because I wasn't thinking in terms of, I don't want to say poor him, don't get me wrong, but poor anyone in a situation where you're truly heroic by not taking the bribe because your life literally can hang in the balance. My issue with this guy is he was doing this during most of his career, and we've lost a lot of people by the cartel. And there's not just blood on his hand, but dead blood on his hand. And enough said, I guess. Next headline, 5 people shot on Mardi Gras parade route in New Orleans, 1 dead. The shooting was Sunday night along a Mardi Gras parade route in New Orleans again, left 1 person dead and 4 others wounded. What do you think about this?
Well, New Orleans is fast becoming the most dangerous city in the country, which is a shame because it is famous for its parties. It's I've been there plenty of times. It's you know, it has its bad parts, has its good parts. We all fell in love with it when Katrina destroyed it, and it's just a shame where it is now. But again, this is 100% the fault of the politicians. This was preventable, and they're going to reap what they sow. But unfortunately, they're not getting hurt or killed, and they don't care. It's innocent people that are getting hurt or killed, and now it's just a city that I would have no interest in returning to, and it's going to take decades to recover.
Glenn.
And it's happening all over the country. And again, it's back to the politicians, and the laws are passing and hamstringing the police from doing their job.
Yeah, I have no idea the backstory on this in terms of, was this guy like, you know, a lot of the stories we hear where they commit a murder and they were out on bail with zero time
in
jail.
Well, I doubt this was his first rodeo. I doubt this was, right, he was like, right, you know what, I'm just going to go shoot people. He's probably a shithead and has been a shithead for a long time. And there were opportunities to prevent it. There were red flags. Again, it's preventable. And our politicians and a lot of our DAs now have no interest in being proactive, and they're not even being reactive anymore. It's just like, oh, you did, go home. You're good. Do it again.
The next headline, man arrested in Los Angeles area for the Catholic bishop's slaying.
Archbishop.
Thank you.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so your familiar story, go for it.
Well, yeah. It's shocking just for obvious reasons. You don't often hear about an archbishop being murdered, but it turns out, I believe this is the husband of the house cleaner.
It was, and who also worked there.
Yes, so I think it turned out to be a dispute over money.
That's what he's saying.
That's what he's saying. Regardless, somebody, an older person, lost their life in a very violent way and in a violent city. And again, you got to wonder if it can happen in some places safe as a diocesan home.
Yeah.
Then it can happen anywhere.
I'll add a little bit more, and then I'll hand over to you, Glenn. This his name was O'Connell, from Ireland. He had worked in South Los Angeles for years and focused on gang intervention and was later a broker of peace during the Rodney King riots. Oh, and then recently, wow, over the 2020 Summer of Love, I'm using air quotes sarcastically, he also was a broker for peace there. This was a good guy, a true loss to the community. Again, I look at, to your point, this was someone that was within that inner circle. And as homicide detectives, any kind of detective, you kind of look at the inner circle. Your thoughts, Glenn?
Well, this first I've heard of that. So I've been traveling and missed
fair
things.
Enough.
But I just, shocking. And unfortunately, it's not a lone occurrence again.
No.
And I think I'm going to go with what Jason's talking about, prosecutors and the people that are just letting people fly. And most of the people that are committing these crimes are repeat offenders. And where do you go from there if you're not going to stop them?
I think there's no question that right now, and this is a strong statement, feel free to disagree with me, but never in my lifetime, again, 50 years, has it been more dangerous to be a law-abiding, productive member of society. You are at the biggest risk because the people making decisions are more protected than you, and the people who are hurting you are given free passes to continue to do it again.
Yeah, I think there's truth in that, especially since you prefaced it with, it's your lifetime. I don't know about the 30s. I wasn't around during Capone in Chicago. I have no idea how dangerous it was.
They only hurt each other.
Citizen. Well, there were bad shots, too. And police, that was the biggest time police died, was in the 30s, because they were corrupt and they were shooting each other. So other than that time period, I kind of think you're right. Yeah. And it goes perfectly with our last headline. another mass shooting. Louisiana police arrest 19-year-old, two 19-year-olds in targeted Baton Rouge nightclub shooting that left 12 wounded. Are you familiar with this? Because this kind of went a little bit under the radar, a little bit.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's because it's happening
so often.
You know, we just had the other night, it happened in Memphis, and
yes,
everybody's still so focused on the Memphis thugs that I'm not even going to call them cops because they're not cops.
No, they were.
But
never
also,
should have been.
Also in Memphis, you had two officers lost last week, one to suicide, yes, one to murder. Both officers are black, and radio fucking silence
from
the media and Black Lives Matter and the politicians. Nobody cares about them. But yeah, the one in Baton Rouge, it was a month or two ago in Baton Rouge that there's video evidence. There was a beautiful young girl just living her life, being a student at Louisiana State University, went out to a bar, unfortunately ends up getting raped and murdered, left on the side of the road.
Bless
and
her heart.
We don't talk about her, her family, what they're going through forever. And it's just nonstop every day. That's why every week we have these headlines.
Yeah, too many.
As I sit here right now, I'm wondering, what next Wednesday, what are the headlines going to
be? Another mass shooting.
Because in the next 7 days, a lot of people are going to lose their lives. A lot of innocent people are going to be hurt, maimed, and killed. And nobody, I apologize for saying nobody, the people who should care don't.
They give lip service. They always point fingers. They don't lift a finger. Glenn, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, they point a finger at the weapon. They don't look at the mental health that's creating these issues.
It's
always
there.
Yeah, and they're it's a shadow game, in my opinion. And they don't want to deal with the facts and the way to handle it because it's outside their realm.
They turn to a political,
talking
point. And not really caring about the true cause. Absolutely. I agree with you. I cannot thank you enough for sticking around for our Cop Talk segment, Glenn. It's always nice getting another factor because me and Jason will disagree, and I need that validation that I might sometimes not be wrong.
You're not wrong very often. You're not wrong very often.
We'll be right back with our last segment with heroic headlines and Jason's always inspirational closing message. We'll be right back.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Batch Boys. We'll be back right after this.
During these challenging days, we not only need to remember our many fallen heroes for their ultimate sacrifice, but also honor them so their families know we've not forgotten. And that's what the Arizona Fallen Hero Memorial Riders Organization is all about. Each year, the nonprofit organizes three memorial rides among the beautiful backdrop of North, South, and Central Arizona, with the proceeds going to the 100 Club of Arizona. Learn more about these fun rides and how you can honor all of Arizona's fallen heroes at ArizonaFallenHeroesMemorialRiders.org.
You're listening to Batch Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Batch Boys.
That was an excellent Cop Talk. I loved having Glenn weigh in, having a the three of us kind of talk about these headlines, as always. I think it's really good therapy for you, my friend.
It's why I don't need a therapist, because I have you and Robin and this microphone that I can vent into every week. So, and I know, Robin, you're laughing over there. So, yeah.
And you're my hero, and so it's so appropriate for you to give us our heroic headlines.
Well, this week's heroic headline, we are going to honor a fallen police officer, which we rarely do because unfortunately there's too many to choose from, right?
It's
happening all the time. But this week we are going to honor Milwaukee police officer Peter Jerving. He was shot and killed while trying to apprehend a robbery suspect. Officer Jerving responded to a radio call to check for a man wanted a connection with a robbery that occurred. The robbery suspect, 19 years old, Terrell Thompson. According to Milwaukee Police Chief Jeffrey Norman, several officers confronted Thompson, including Officer Jerving. The suspect ignored police commands, fled on foot. Officers gave chase. Thompson fired shots at them from a handgun, striking Officer Jerving. The officer was mortally wounded, then discharged his weapon at Thompson. I love, how oftentimes you hear about an officer that ends up succumbing to his injuries, but is somehow able to return fire. They just don't give up until they absolutely can't do anymore.
Yeah, stay in the fight.
Jervin later died at the hospital, and while Thompson died at the scene, can I just add in here, good.
Yeah,
the police chief added it was not immediately clear whether the suspect's injuries were self-inflicted. In an emotional news conference, Chief Norman spoke about Officer Jervin saying, "He's one of our finest who put on that uniform, put on that badge, went into work last night, paid the ultimate sacrifice for protecting our community." In November, the police department awarded Officer Jervin with a life-saving award. He and another officer had witnessed a car crash last summer and found the driver was suffering from a gunshot wound. The officers provided care to the driver, and Jervin used a fire extinguisher to put out the flames in the victim's car. Norman said Jervin is a longtime Milwaukee resident who all he wanted to be was an officer in that city since he was 13 years old. We can definitely relate to that. Officer Jervin was only 37 years old. And, of course, officers lined the driveway of DME's office after offering salutes as Jervin's family approached the hearse. With Jervin's body inside, officers remained saluting as the hearse drove out of the driveway and entered the procession of police vehicles and fire trucks. The procession drove under an American flag, which hung, as always, from a fire truck ladder at an intersection. I love the camaraderie.
I do too.
For all the jokes aside,
right,
it's a beautiful thing. And the fire department is always there with their biggest, baddest truck and the biggest, most beautiful American flag.
Their family.
Always.
It
is a moving thing to see. The day prior, Milwaukee County Circuit Judge Christopher D. sentenced Terrell Thompson to 4 months in the House of Corrections for two separate hit-and-run charges. However, that sentence was suspended for a year of probation. And, of course, within that year of probation, he was allowed to do something else.
Day later.
And kill one of our officers.
Day later.
It's stunning. I'm glad I didn't choose that as the inspirational for this week because it's incredibly sad. But Officer Jervin, God bless him, his service, his sacrifice, his family, and Milwaukee. But that is just a representation of every officer, every department across this country right now and the battle they're in. So God rest his soul and Godspeed to the Milwaukee Police Department. Keep on fighting and don't give up on his legacy.
Yeah, I love the stay in the fight and never forget. Yeah. Absolutely, brother. Again, you take us to the heart of heroism, and I take us to the bowels of humanity.
I can't wait, as
literally.
Always. We have no idea what's coming, right? Well, Robin, you might.
We're going
coming.
Literally to the bowels.
Oh, we really are.
No.
You know, I love our stupid suspect stories, but last week you had a really good butt quote from some stupid lawmaker. And I love our butt quotes because we don't care if you're on the left or on the right, or if you're in the corner on some red and blue fight. We don't care if you're a card-carrying member of the Green Tea Party or a communist wanting to say they're sorry. Saying anti-police rhetoric one day and butt quotes the next, well, that don't make you complex. It just makes you a two-faced rat. And here's a councilwoman who did just that.
My butt feels weird.
Oh, yeah, I'll tell you what the jive is. In August 2020, in the city of Austin, Texas, every city council member voted to defund the police budget by one-third, cutting $150 million from the Austin police budget in favor of, quote-unquote, redistributing it to social services and alternative police public safety programs. At that time, City Councilwoman Mackenzie Kelly and others said, quote, "We support reimagining traffic safety and enforcement within this proposal." Kelly then went on to say, quote, "We could easily divest over $18 million from the traffic enforcement when most of these functions can be administered easily by unarmed civilians, and it's not required to be police work. As a result, they drastically reduce the size of the police force and cancel police recruit academy classes." However, just recently, last week, I don't know if you remember this or saw this on the news, Jason, but on February 23, again, just a week ago, violent street racers hijacked a busy intersection in Austin, outnumbering the police hundreds to one.
It was an impressive scene. I won't lie. It was an impressive scene to watch.
And I'm not exaggerating when I say 100 to 1.
Easily.
They injured police and bystanders alike with their hazardous driving, dangerous fireworks, and physical attacks. However, Kelly said, seeing that, but now she's doing her butt quote, but the simple fact is that we need more police officers in this city patrolling our streets.
Don't say.
Downtown and major events. We need more police officers responding to calls for service. We need more police officers to reinstate specialized units. This must be an urgent priority for the new mayor and the rest of the city council. But that's not what she said. She placed the blame on the shortages right at the feet of police because she also said this, quote, the possibility of a catastrophic cascading failure due to lack of support from our police department puts the city, its residents, and visitors at risk. It's support for the police department, you two-faced rat. You can't blame police, and you're an idiot if you think the citizens don't see through that.
Did you also see that this same council person called 911 and was on hold?
One. It was a different one.
Was on hold. Wait for it.
Yeah.
27 minutes on hold. I haven't called 911 very often.
And she blames the police but and 911.
They answer in 27 seconds. And that's a long time.
And again, go back 2 years ago, they defunded $150 million from police. Uh-huh. Guess what? 911 is part of the police budget. Uh-huh. And so they are the architect of their own stupidity and downfall. And yet they have the audacity to blame the people that they're stealing from.
They don't care. Austin, whenever I hear that name, because I love Texas, obviously, for a lot of reasons. My grandson is there. You're right. Austin is an incredible city. But I think that if we could just take a really nice sharp knife, draw a circle around it, and remove it and put it somewhere in Northern California, because Austin does not belong in Texas anymore. It is just absurd. So, that's pretty bad.
And so as much as I love Austin, you know what other city is I love? San Francisco. I used to love San Francisco.
Used to.
Yeah.
That U period, S period, E period, D period, all the capitals. Used to.
100%.
It's horrible.
So the next and last butt quote is from San Francisco Mayor London Breed, who in the summer of 2020 spearheaded a $120 million defunding of police and sheriff's departments, but now has launched $27 million emergency funding of police for intervention in the San Francisco crime-ridden Tenderloin neighborhood, targeting a pipeline of legal drugs that has been fueling a surge in gun violence and so deadly fentanyl overdoses. She actually got angry and frustrated, again, spouting out butt quotes, talking about all sorts of things. And I think it's all because of the gloom of her polls, but she said, quote, butt quote, it's time to rein in the criminals who are destroying our city with more aggressive law enforcement, more aggressive with the changes in our policies, and let's tolerate all of this bullshit that's destroyed our city. Oh, yeah, tough rant from a two-faced rat. And that is our butt quotes.
Outstanding.
My butt feels weird.
I think we're going to drown this out.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I think, in fact, we'll go halfway through. I like the jive at the end because it's perfectly telling of the
so
BS.
Much BS. Yeah.
Thank you.
We need something to uplift us, Jason.
Do we not? Something inspiring?
Yes.
Well, you got to wait for the close because we're going to start with an abysmal part of an inspirational story. And this is right here in our home county, Darren. Again, first the abysmal. So hang in there with me. The Maricopa County Attorney's Office reviewed a submittal from the Phoenix Police Department for an incident that occurred on October 27th, 2022 to determine whether two officers used excessive force when taking a defendant into custody after the defendant fired on the officers at a convenience store. the use of deadly force, and now they're reviewing the officer's actions and, afterwards.
And barely missed.
That's stunning. Stunning. After a careful review of all the facts and evidence in the case, the Maricopa County's Attorney's Office determined that the actions taken by Officer Eddie Becerra warranted a criminal charge. Prosecutors presented the case to a Maricopa County grand jury on Thursday, January 26th of 2023. Now, for the inspirational.
Please.
The presentation included body-worn camera footage. This is why, and I know some officers will disagree, I'm a huge fan.
Oh, transparency.
Of body cam.
Yeah. Helps us more than hurts us.
Yes. I'd say it's like 99 to 1.
Thank you.
Surveillance video provided by the convenience store also, and a video recorded by a bystander. The grand jury declined to issue what we know as a true bill or an indictment. The Maricopa County's Attorney's Office also reviewed the facts and evidence as it related to actions taken by Officer Nicholas Beck. The office determined that there was no reasonable likelihood of a conviction.
What? Duh.
That is...
Yeah, it's a duh.
I hate that fucking sentence. No likelihood of a conviction. So we're just going to quit and not do our job. For his conduct and did not seek a grand... They didn't even seek a grand jury indictment for Officer Beck. Due to the high level of public interest in this matter, the office requested that the grand jury findings be unsealed. Even though the police departments and the DAs seem to invoke politics, they did, and are quick to criminally charge police officers for using any force when trying to save their lives, the citizens that make up these jury pools, which are so, there is really not a lot of higher callings than sitting on a grand jury. It is an incredibly important
such commitment
job. It truly is. The citizens that made up these jury pools around the nation seem to get it above and beyond the investigators, the DAs,
they're political.
You know, having been a detective as you have, I've done a lot of work with Maricopa County Attorney's Office. They actually did a great job in my case against the guy who hit me. It's just appalling to think in the last 20 years, what's going on over there right now that they... Because they could have, Darren, you had body cam footage from the officers.
Shot the car.
You had surveillance footage from the store, and you had video from video. You cannot misinterpret video. You can't lie or add words or detract. It's right there to be seen. And if deadly force is used against an officer, they shot at the officer first.
Shot their car.
You know, that what citizens and politicians and DAs need to recognize first and foremost, if a suspect is willing to fire at an officer, they are willing to hurt anybody else. I mean, you talk about a danger to society, and the fact that the officers came back to do what was necessary to get this person in custody and then were questioned and tried for an indictment on one of them. So,
crazy.
Thankfully, again, that and I bet some of those citizens on that grand jury went home that night and said,
"What the hell?
You are not going to believe what I had to sit through today, and how unbelievably stupid these DAs are, these attorneys."
Targeted prosecution.
And of course, it's 100% political. We have to appease all of the activists and all of the Antifa and whoever else in Phoenix was like, oh my God, these officers, they did a
pushed
bad
them.
Thing. Yeah, they did a bad thing. So the inspirational part of that, without a doubt, is that citizens recognized, no, these officers did their job, let them go back to work and let them do it again. And I deeply appreciate that because it's a rare thing. So that was very inspirational. Please stay safe. God bless all of you. We will see you next week.
Batch Boys. Thanks for listening to Batch Boys. Stories, insights, guests, and true blue humor with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Batch Boys, heard weekly and worldwide on Star Worldwide networks and all mobile devices. Batch Boys.